Welcome back to Leveraging Leadership, where we unpack the art of business leadership. I'm your host, Emily Sander, Chief of Staff turned Executive Leadership Coach. And this show is all about finding your greatest points of influence and leveraging them to best serve those around you. Today, we are joined by Erin Labax, and she is an educator and teaches people all over the world how to write more effectively. And her book, High Value Writing, helps business professionals communicate with confidence and with clarity to their colleagues, which is something we can all use. So, Erin, a very warm welcome to you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emily. I'm glad to be here. And I loved what you just, your intro about service. That's kind of what we're talking about here, too, using our writing to serve the goal or the team or whoever.
Absolutely. And so I know that you work with the chief of staff at a Fortune 50 company, and we'll leave it at that. But right. You are helping that person with their communication and also helping their team and company be more effective at that larger level with the company-wide communication. So that was an interesting project you had. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a great project. And it's starting to trickle around to different parts of the company, which is fun. But I think what happened is this company was facing what so many teams are, especially at the executive level. And they were finding when our team writes things that maybe are going to end up in a board notes or end up in an annual report or end up in something like that, the executives would find themselves having to rewrite things every time. And then with even just emailing or even Teams posts and things like that, the lack of clarity was creating time on both ends. So you can imagine the writers taking a long time trying to craft their message the best they can, but then it really wasn't meeting the mark of what would be helpful to the execs. So then they, again, are having to sort of translate that message to what matters to them. And so I've been called in to say, hey, how can we all work together to sort of protect each other's time, ensure mutual understanding by using some intentional writing strategies that boost clarity, really, and just kind of looking at the teamwork aspect of communication.
I love that.
And so that's been really interesting to observe. Yeah.
Yes, I love that. And thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing. And I think a lot of chiefs of staff are in that position where, so for instance, when I was chief of staff, it would be the board meetings every quarter and understanding what's most important to them. Because if we're talking about this and making slides over here and making pretty, you know, charts over here, but they don't care about that, then there's a huge right. disconnect. And making sure we're not only conveying the content that they want, but also delivering it in a way that's going to land effectively. So for those, and I was coordinating many executives to come up with our board deck. So when you're working, when you have someone who's working with, let's say, a handful of people, five people, to put together a group presentation, what are some good ways to approach that?
Yeah, and that's a great question because there are a few kind of easy things. I call them agreements. If five of us are creating something, we can make agreements, little things like using active voice, et cetera. And I'll mention a couple more, but I think before that is even talking to that group about our outlooks around writing, where most of us have been raised to not really have enough focus on the others when we write. We tend to write with self-focus instead of other focus. And of course, leaders know our words have impact, right? They impact people's behaviors and certainly their beliefs and perceptions about the job and about other things. And so talking with our teams about focusing on the needs of the reader, like you were saying, what's going to be important to these board members? And even just having that discussion, because often we haven't been taught that our writing exists now for another person to use. And so we have to tailor it with that in mind. So I usually talk with teams about having agreements like using a specific flow trick in the writing where one sentence always follows the previous really, really logically. And if all five of us use that trick, the whole thing will not only flow, but kind of sound like the same person wrote it. Active voice, more bullets, more scannability. And it's worth taking a little bit of time with our teams to say, hey, let's all do these three things when we write our part. And now when the chief is putting it all together, they're not so divergent. And they have a little bit of the same voice, but they also have that focus of what the reader needed rather than what we're always worrying in our heads of how am I going to say this correctly? What really matters is, like you said, how is it going to land for them?
Yeah. And I think I've been guilty of that, where I need to have the exact right words to say, both yes. on my slide deck and for my verbal talk track. And it's like, Emily, just convey the information. So there comes a point when you do that. Is there anything around, there's so many different mediums now. So email and Slack and text message and all these different things. Are there considerations for all those different channels?
I think so, yes. And I'll talk about a couple specifics, but first I'll say one big difference that we're just now realizing is that some of those channels you mentioned can be publicly read if it's a Slack post in front of other people. And some of those are private, like a DM or an email. So I was working with a federal public sector client, and a high-ranking person shared with me that when she observes people writing on Slack or Teams or Rike or other sharing platforms, she'll notice people spending a lot of care when they write to high-level supervisors and then spending less care and time when they fire off an answer to someone that they may think is less important just because of the hierarchy. Well, guess what? Everybody is seeing it, right? And so it's not, we wouldn't want a leader to do that, of course, and be modeling the idea of writing with more care to people who have more power. That's not what we want to do, right? And so keeping in mind, my writing is public right now, what examples do I want to be setting for the other people writing on this channel? And so that's one thing to consider. And then I think with emails, posts on Slack, and DMs, what they do have in common is the idea of front-loading information quickly. In all of those cases, we don't want any kind of slow lead-ins. Like, it seems to me that we might want to consider say the thing, right? And yet we've all been kind of schooled that it's sophisticated to say it has come to our attention that. No, get right to the information. Who did something? What did they do? Put that at the front. And so they can all be front-loaded, but they all have a different level of publicity. They all have a different level of formality, right? Some are more conducive to emojis and kind of like, yeah, we're all sharing and I want to express my tone through an emoji, which I think is great when it's the right genre. And so that level of informality, intimacy, those types of things change as well.
So on that, which is, where do you come down on emojis? Because I've heard people from all over the spectrum, and I'll give my answer, but just I want to hear from you because you're the expert. Where would you come down on the use of emojis?
Right. So I am in general, okay, well, anything we write, there's never a right and wrong answer, right? It's always situational. Always circumstantial. So if the situation calls for it, I am pro emoji in general, because writing really has two things going on for a reader when they receive it and for us when we write it. We're sending informational topics and we're sending relational topics. I could say, hey, Emily, I don't agree with you in this way. And I could do it in a way where we maintain trust. Or I could do it in a rude way where we don't. And that's the two goals. I want to say my information, but there's also the relational aspect of how I say it and how my intention comes through. So when it's okay to use emojis, that is helpful, right? For showing our intention and tone. However, not to be scary, but I did work with someone who was threatened with getting fired because of her emoji use. This was actually a cultural difference. So we want to consider industry culture, generational culture, regional cultures around the world. She was a French woman who'd moved to the US, still working for a French company. She picked up a lot of American norms, like emoji use. And when she would send it back to her bosses in France, they were not having any of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So emojis, we need to think, you know, what industry are they in? How old are they? What are the norms in this group of people before we make that decision?
Yeah. I mean, the answer is it depends. The answer is it depends and it's situational. So I completely agree with that. When I remember I would be writing emails to outside counsel on an HR matter. And then that was very formal and pretty buttoned up. And then like literally I would be going back and forth between that email exchange and a Slack with, you know, someone who's a customer service rep. And I'm like doing the emojis and doing all the different things. And I'm using very different tone of language. And I think it gets back to you know, knowing your audience and knowing the situation and also building those relationships. So if I were to add a whole bunch of, you know, likes and, you know, and not capitalize the I's on the email to this legal team, I might lose a bit of trust or credibility in that exchange. Whereas if I was super stiff and formal and like the stipulation in the handbook says we should do this with a customer in the Slack message, same thing. The CSR is going to be like, why are you being like that? And so I'm wondering if there's any tips for people to kind of flex in and out of these different communication channels and situations and audiences. Is there kind of some guidelines to keep in mind?
Sure. And I loved your examples because what you're doing is being agile, right? And that's the whole key of writing is we want to be flexible and situation dependent, like you're saying. So I always suggest that before somebody writes something on any channel, they think about their goal in two ways, where we typically only think about one goal. What do I want to get across? But we have to do the two goals every time. What's my information I want to get across? And who is this? What's my relationship with this person? And coaching ourselves to think through that second one helps recognize things like exactly what you said. A lot of people don't realize that being very formal can also be off-putting as being too informal. Mm-hmm. But it depends who, and it depends on our goal. So your goal on your Slack example was to help the reader be motivated, engaged. You're showing her she's doing a good job. You had all these sort of emotional, psychological goals behind your writing. Whereas when you're writing to the legal team, you have the goal of maintaining trust and credibility, which is different. And so we really need to shift our outlook to goal-oriented in a relationship way, not just information.
I think the distinction between information and relational is really key. And I love that point. So that's a great takeaway. And it's relational as in the relationship you have with that person at the beginning, and then it's the relationship you want with the person at the end of that communication. So how do you want them to feel? What do you want them to be thinking about? And what do you want them to go do? And so I think it's kind of, okay, if that's my end goal, that's what I want the relationship to be at the end. How do I kind of reverse engineer into that and say, what does my communication need to look like?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And when we're not sure what we want to reverse engineer, the best way to learn writing, which sometimes I think, why do I say this as a writing teacher with a writing book? You don't need those necessarily. What you need is to observe your own reactions when you are the reader, right? Who hasn't received a text message that made you immediately excited, immediately annoyed, immediately kind of don't want to deal with that person? We know what it's like to have those relational reactions. So observe ourselves when you get an email and you think, wow, I'm actually kind of excited to do this. What was done in the email that made it easy for you to get excited? Or what was done in the email that made you feel condescended to? Mm-hmm. So we can learn by observing ourselves as readers. And then that helps us reverse engineer. Oh, I don't want them to feel dismissed. I want them to feel like I believe in them. I know now that it feels pretty bad when people say like, hey, Erin, you didn't do blah, blah, blah. That's not productive. I'm going to say it in a different way.
Yeah. And I remember, so when you talk about observing kind of how things land, I remember I had this Slack conversation and for some reason, I forget why, I had to copy and paste this like to show someone on the leadership team. And as I was reading through this conversation, I was like, oh my goodness, I come off like very pointed and very sharp. And I remembered that day I was very busy. And so what I was probably doing is like flying through Slacks and flying through emails very quickly. But when I took that in isolation, I said, man, I come off really like brief and really short and really abrupt. And so that was a good exercise just for me to say, okay, even when you're busy, take the extra time to, you know, add three or four different words in this sentence to make it a little bit softer, just because that's the actual tone that I am trying to convey to this person. I would never be that short with this person on purpose.
In person. Well, and you're right. It takes, especially at first, when we start working with this idea of informational and relational goal, at first it takes a little extra time. But I often think, okay, maybe it took me 5 minutes to tweak that message. It would have taken me 30 minutes to have a negative conversation afterwards if I hadn't.
Unpack, yeah. What I meant to say was,
yeah. Right, it's an investment in reducing the time later on misunderstandings, hurt feelings, all of that. to do that kind of front loading in the beginning and take that time. And then also when you were, I love that idea that not only can we observe our own reactions, but you can go look at your own writing later for the tone. And I often encourage people, if it's an emotional topic, read your own writing aloud, but in a voice that's a little snarky or a little unpleased. Because I always think, what if my reader just walked out of a meeting where everyone was arguing and that was when they read my email? And they're ready to read and interpret it in a snarky or upset voice.
Yeah.
And so that's how I'll check, okay, this is a sort of emotional issue. I'm going to reread this through that tone. And sometimes, and we'll do this in class too with, you know, adult learners, obviously, and we'll notice things like something like the word still. If you still need information, let me know. Sounds fine, but snarky, if you still need more information, yeah, you can reach out. You know, and that's how you can catch, oh, shoot, I don't want it to sound like
you're that stupid. You didn't pick up on it the first time.
Right.
You'll reach out to me if you need to. Yeah, exactly. No, those are good points. And I think that's where, I mean, as silly as they are, like sometimes emojis can help. Like, oh, okay. Like she's meaning that in a nice way. And one thing that I've found, and I forget who taught me this, but a long time ago, they were like, ask it in the form of a question. Instead of directing someone to do something, ask if mm-hmm. they can. Now, both people might know very well, it's not really a question. It's like kind of, we're going to do this thing, but just communicating it in a different way. Hey, is there any way you can do this, this, and this versus go do this now? Those are two very different statements, I feel like.
Well, definitely. And I think what you're getting to there is really the heart of this issue of relational writing for leaders specifically, which is the concept of power and choice, right? So when you rephrased it from a directive to a question, you're allowing the reader more agency. And you're not doing a power play. You're trying to sort of even the field and say, we both matter. We both know this needs to happen, but let's be collaborative and polite about it. And you're not holding all the power for yourself. And that's something we can do in real sneaky ways in writing, is play with the power dynamics. You know, if I'm saying the committee requires your input, the committee requests your input. It shifts who has the power with one word. And that's key for leaders, because a disempowered reader or a reader who feels no agency or choice is typically going to be kind of in a bad mood.
Hi, Emily here. Quick 10-second message. If you or anyone you know has been thinking about coaching, head over to nextlevel.coach. Your future self and your friends will thank you. Well, I mean, we all feel like we know what it's like to have someone like tell us what to do or make us feel trapped. You know, that's not a good feeling. And I think there too, it's kind of like if you're directing people, you are assuming you have all the information sometimes, and sometimes you don't. So you need to be open to the fact, hey, here's what I'm seeing. What do you think is a very powerful phrase? Like, tell me, you know, your input and your thoughts on this. I would really like to have that side of information as well. And you could learn like, oh, I was assuming this happened. And what you just said makes that a completely different scenario. So I think there's moments for I guess, gathering information instead of directing people.
Agreed. And even when we are directing, it's unlikely that we know the whole entire 360 degrees perspective, right? So it is useful. We might improve not only the relationship, but whatever the product or outcome was by doing.
Yeah. And I think, again, back to our situational leadership point, there are times when I was very directive. And if like servers were down and our customers didn't have websites or something was happening at a building where, you know, a water thing leak was coming in and our team was being effective, I was very pointed and short with my communication because we needed to move fast and it wasn't a discussion. Yeah, it was like, here's what we need to do to get these people out of here. So I think, again, situation by situation and applying judgment. I mean, we need to apply judgment and take the time to do that. One of the things a lot of people have today are international teams. So they're working with people from all over the world and different regions and different countries with different levels of proficiency in language, but also different cultural viewpoints. And so when you bring those two into the mix where English might not be your first language, okay, well, there's an aspect to consider. And, oh, in this culture over here in this country, something that's acceptable here might not be. So how do you kind of navigate those types of elements?
I love that question because it's huge and people don't realize, yeah, most of us work in an international or global team to some extent. And even when we don't, we may not realize that our American colleague has parents who practice a completely different culture or something, right? So even on domestic, shall we say, teams, we do have multicultural impacts in communication. And there are many things to consider. One of the most important, I think, is it varies by culture how direct we feel it's polite to be. Level of directness, level of formality, level of kind of respect for a hierarchy versus egalitarian communication. And in that, with that client you mentioned earlier, recently they added another set of four classes where we did one for each kind of quadrant of the world. You know, I was up at interesting hours. And the section that had Mumbai, Shanghai, a lot of other folks in that time zone, we had such, it was a wonderful conversation because there were no, you know, other supervisors in the room. It was just us and the team from those countries. And what we talked about was, for example, active voice is very promoted in the West, and Americans feel like direct is best and active voice is super direct and clear. Yet some of these participants said, oh my gosh, it is way too aggressive in our cultures to say things with active voice or to say things in such a directed way, because many cultures put the relationship before the outcome. Right? You get in a meeting and how's your family? These types of things before you get to the agenda. Whereas often with Americans or Western Europeans, it's like, boom, what's number one on the agenda? Yeah. We don't really care who's here. You know, we're not. And so what that difference is about is about what is it like to establish trust? Do we establish trust through the work or through creating a relationship first? And the relational cultures would prefer often less direct communication with a little more respect in a way for one another and sounding less aggressive. And so even something as simple as active voice can be quite useful. But if we get in a situation where it's like, well, Erin didn't turn in her metrics, so the report's not ready, they might feel like that's accusatory. And let's say we will finish the report when we get all the metrics.
Yeah.
No need to call out Erin. That's not polite in all cultures, right?
No, it's so good because I've had teams in Chennai, India, and when we ask employees for feedback, you know, we're actually asking to, you know, we want to hear the bad stuff too. And I remember with that team, I had teams all over the world, and with that team, it was a little bit difficult to get candid feedback because they weren't about to tell the boss what was going wrong. And I remember we did an anonymous survey, and one person from that team was like, we could use these types of drinks in the conference room instead of this type of drink. And I was like, all right, well, at least that's something. So it was kind of nice. It was kind of on the path toward more candid feedback. But in terms of trust, so that's been a through line throughout all of this conversation. You're trying to establish or maintain or build up trust. And so if you're sitting there going, okay, I hear what Erin's saying, I want to make sure I'm considering my audience and considering the situation, but like sometimes I just don't know how I'm coming across, or I don't know what this person wants to, what type of communication this person wants. How would you advise someone to go about approaching that?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a lot to think about. And of course, as you get to know your reader or the department you're writing to, you can start to tweak your writing a little bit. But I think, again, most of us would approach a message thinking, what are the most important things to say here? And when we can tweak it to what are the needs of the other person, that can help. And one, I'll tell a couple kind of common issues that people might want to consider. One is just how accused or dismissed or powerless does a reader feel? And that often just comes down to simple use of the words you and your. Where I can say, Erin, why didn't you include a timeline in your report? Or I can say, hey, Erin, let's include a timeline in the report. And it's so easy to take the person away and focus on the outcome or the deliverable. And that way, I used to do this as a university instructor, and it provides an example where writing comments on an essay, if they did a wonderful job with evidence, I would say, you provided such good evidence here. And then when they didn't, I would not write, you failed to provide evidence. I would write, page 3 needs more evidence.
So when it's not a positive thing, you personalize it when it's positive, and then you make
exactly.
Okay.
When it's negative, I make it about the goal, the product. And students would come to office hours and say, oh my gosh, poor page 3. You're right. It has no evidence. And now we're all open-minded about teaming up to improve page 3. So really, it's often who or what is becoming the focus of your sentence.
I love
it. And if it's negative, make sure that that's not a human being, right? Try to keep it as a goal or an outcome.
Yeah.
As the focus. And then another quick one I'll say is when people don't feel respected, it's often about verbs. Verbs are the words that carry tone as well as really good information. Like I said earlier, the committee requires your feedback, requests, invites, needs, wants. We're changing power. We're changing tones through our verbs. And I often talk about this with people who want to sort of build up themselves and others in their demographic group too. Often women will talk about this, or I've talked with a lot of men, specifically in India, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka, who say, well, we've been raised to not write in a way that sounds confident to Americans and women too. And I'll say, well, look at your verbs when you talk about each other. Instead of Emily is now going to lead that, Emily directs that, right? Just give Emily the verb that shows her doing a really important action when we talk about each other. And so when you're writing about others from your team, instead of something like, I've put Aaron in charge of that now, well, we're going to say Aaron supervises that this year, and use those verbs for other people so that they are presented with power.
I love that one too. And I remember maybe midpoint in my career, I was on a team, and I looked at their communication and I looked at mine, and I noticed that I would often couch or hedge what I was saying, like da 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 da. I mean, I could be wrong about that, da 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 da, but I might not have all the information. I was like, oh my goodness. So when I took a look at that, I said, I am not doing any of those clauses anymore. I am taking those out and I'm standing on my own 2 feet. And for a while, it was a big adjustment, like, oh my gosh, I'm being bold about this. And now I just do it out of practice, because it's like, no, I do know this information. So here it is. Open to more information, obviously, but you know, this is where we stand right here. So I think paying attention to those little things that turn out to be big things and how they land is worthwhile. Is there anything where I'm imagining, like, if you need to ask someone, or if you need to be like, I'm still not quite sure, I do all the things that you suggested, Aaron, but can I check it? Is there a way to ask someone or be like, how is that being received? Or is there a better way to say that, or kind of check in with someone about that?
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? That's a really good question, because we can extend that to other things. It's okay to talk about writing, and it's okay to talk about writing fears and writing fails. Some of my most productive classes are when somebody kind of confesses a writing fail and we unpack what happened. And so I think it's completely normal. It's just not practiced for teams to talk about their writing and say, hey, I'm doing this with my writing. What does it sound like to you? And then even go to the next step of, what if all 5 of us agreed to use this really clear form of email subject lines, for example? Now we all made an agreement and we're all, you know, going to save time. I worked with the team who had made the agreement before I got there that within themselves, they were not going to write emails that just said, thank you, I received the document. No more thank you emails. They just don't say thanks anymore, because that's another email. But they agreed with each other. So now they're not sounding rude because they talked about it. And so it would be wonderful for team leads to talk about, how is my communication coming off? Not only so they can discover the answer, but so they're modeling that concept of caring about that, of being transparent about our worries about it. Because the other thing about writing is, many people come in with fear of judgment, and for good reason, right? So many people are afraid to talk about their writing or their mistakes, because we've been taught that our writing is a way for people to judge us. but make it sort of demystifying and say, yeah, here's what I'm not sure of. What are you not sure of? Is a great way to model for your team as well.
I think that's a great takeaway. So if you're listening and you're on a management team, bring this up as a topic for a group and just normalize that process about talking about communication. And when you said that, I was like, oh, that's so important, because imagine all of the miscommunication, the miscues, the misunderstandings, the feelings of resentment that you might not be 100% aware of, but are happening in your org. And if you can minimize those and allow people just to go, you're going to streamline your processes, you're going to have happier employees and therefore more creative ideas and therefore happier customers, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a key point, just to have that conversation.
I agree. And, you know, we hear the saying that people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. And then I say, well, but why? How do they know they want to leave? Well, how does a boss's sort of behavior come through except through their communication? That's where it manifests. Yeah. So I've worked with people who have secretly had plans to leave their job for quite a while, just based on how dismissed they feel from the writing that comes from above.
Yeah.
So it's totally worth talking about.
I think one of the last things I'll throw out there as we wrap up is I had a team of managers and they were first time managers and they were trying to learn everything they could. And I would try to really compliment when they had a good piece of communication. So whether that was internal to a team member or external to a client explaining a situation, I told them, great job, and here's why this was an effective piece of communication. And then I would try to share that publicly too. And so that way, not only did they get recognition, but other people could see an example of good communication. So I don't know if that's something that you teach around, or another element you could bring into the game here.
Well, it's really smart, especially since you're saying how, because most people do want to write well. Of course, most people don't want to hurt others when they write. But the question is how? How do I do it? And we can say, oh, be more concise. But how? Right? And so you're showing it was right here in this sentence that they were empathetic. It was right here with the bullets that they made this easier to read than a big paragraph would have been. And they made choices, and you're calling out those choices.
Yes. So a perfect segue into how do we do more of this? So Aaron, if someone wants to learn more tips and tricks and strategies from you or get connected with you, what is the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, we have a few options, but with what we've been talking about, the easiest, quickest way would be to look at the Strategic Writing for Leaders e-course that actually walks through all of these concepts. You know, there's a unit on sounding confident, using hedges. There's a unit on writing for today's readers, even if they're around the world and you need to use really clear language because we're all at different places with English. There are sections on building camaraderie, teamwork, trust, community, and inclusion, just by how we choose to use our words. So I think that's the most quickly empowering thing a leader can do to start really leveraging, you know, that you're already writing. Why not make it intentional and goal-oriented, right? So that's one of the best ways. And then I also have a book and a YouTube channel that provides, you know, smaller tidbits also with examples that can be helpful for leaders. Occasionally, a leader will show a video with a team and then talk about, okay, where could we apply this? What would this look like for us? And then what are we doing? We're talking openly about writing, which is the goal.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, those short YouTube videos, I've watched some of those, and they would be a great conversation starter for some of those communication discussions. And we'll certainly have a link to your book in the show notes. And thank you for what you're doing again. I know I've said that to you a couple times on the air and off the air, but I've always said that communication is a skill that you can invest in forever, and it'll never be a waste of time. And a lot of people focus on the verbal part of that in leadership roles, and they miss out on the writing. So I really appreciate everything that you're bringing to the table and making easier for people. So thank you once again, Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks, everyone.
Help us in our mission to cultivate and promote exceptional leadership. A simple like or share of this episode can go a long way. Emily, me, the British guy, and the United Kingdom extend its gratitude.